You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, political expert and radio broadcaster Jay Amernick, and me, journalist in all media Heather Vale Goss, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. And welcome to The Political Fix on June 18th, a nice balmy day here in Las Vegas anyway. I don't know about where Rick Raddatz is in Colorado. I'm Heather Vale, and I'm here with my co-host, Jay Amernick, who's a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. He also serves as the bridge in Nevada for Israeli companies who want to expand their business in the U.S., and his development labs create smartphone apps and inventions. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur with a degree in philosophy, which led to his development called The Solution, as well as Pentonomics, which is the philosophy behind The Solution. I'm Heather Vale, otherwise known as The Unwrapper. I'm a freelance interviewer and journalist, and I like peeling back the layers of the onion to discover the truth, which is what The Unwrapper is all about. Hey, guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you, Heather?
Why are you the unpeeler, or the peeler?
Because... Jay, you want to take that one?
Unwrapping actually sounds a little bit, in my mind, sounds a little gentler than unpeeling. Unpeeling sounds a little bit like a little painful.
I'm the peeler.
But if you're going to
use the onion analogy.
Okay, but a peeler.
Then you're the delayerer.
No, Rick, a peeler is a stripper in Canadian term.
Oh, right. That's right. I forgot.
We do
about
not
that.
Call
well, no
them
one knows this.
Strippers. We call them peelers.
A banana can be peeled.
Indeed. However, there's a lot of fun you can have with a word like unwrapped and unwrapper. Like, if I interview
you,
hey, I'm going to unwrap Rick Raddatz. It's a lot more fun than I'm going to unpeel Rick Raddatz or I'm going to peel.
Well,
like, that's just gross.
Yeah, it sounds painful.
Yeah, yeah.
I still say that if you are the unwrapper, you need a better analogy than onions.
Well, no, because you're unwrapping the onion. You're peeling back the layers. You're
are
unwrapping
you?
It. Yeah.
No, you're slicing the onion.
Oh, that's painful.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do slice and dice. Yes, I do.
I've been there.
Yeah. Okay.
And I love
I'm turning
dice,
a story there, but
oh my god.
So how's the weather in Colorado, Rick?
It's pleasant. It's like 72, I think, right now, and it'll be hotter during the day, but it's a real nice morning.
Oh, okay. It's a nice morning here in Vegas, too. It's only 105. No, just
already?
Kidding.
Is it really?
It's not. I'm kidding. It's probably like 90-something right now, but it feels nice. I like it.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah. All right, so I'm going to tell you guys the top story.
Well, okay.
All right.
Here we go.
Iraqi security forces battled insurgents targeting the country's main oil refinery and claimed to regain partial control of a city near the Syrian border today, trying to blunt a week-long offensive by militants who diplomats fear may have abducted some 100 foreign workers. The campaign by the Al-Qaeda-inspired Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant has raised the specter of the sectarian warfare that nearly tore the country apart in 2006 and 2007, and the doubts that followed the 2003 U.S.-led invasion now haunt those trying to decide how to respond. U.S. President Barack Obama will brief lawmakers later today at the White House on what options our wary country could take. Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, meanwhile, struck an optimistic tone after soldiers abandoned their posts in the wake of the initial offensive, promising his nation would teach the attackers a lesson, in quotes. He said, "We've now started our counteroffensive, regaining the initiative and striking back." His relatively upbeat assessment came as the military claimed its forces regained parts of the strategic city of Tal Afar near the Syrian border, which Islamic State fighters captured on Monday. Its closeness to the Syrian border strengthens the Islamic State's plan to carve out an Islamic emirate, as they say, stretching across the Iraq-Syria border. It also came hours after the chief military spokesman, Lieutenant General Qasim al-Musawi, said government forces repelled an attack by militants on the country's largest oil refinery at Beji, which is 150 155 miles north of the capital, Baghdad. Al-Musawi said 40 attackers were killed in the fighting there overnight and this morning, but there has been no independent confirmation of his claims. The Beji refinery accounts for a little more than a quarter of the country's entire refining capacity, all of which goes toward domestic consumption for things like gasoline, cooking oil, and fuel for power stations. In New Delhi, the foreign ministry said that 40 Indian construction workers have been kidnapped in Iraq. There are about 10,000 Indian citizens working and living in Iraq, but only about 100 are in violent, insecure areas. Some 275 armed American forces are being positioned in and around Iraq to help secure U.S. assets, as Obama also considers options for combating the Islamic militants, including airstrikes or a contingent of special forces. The White House has continued to emphasize that any military engagement remains contingent on the government in Baghdad enacting political reforms and ending the sectarian tensions, which have killed thousands since late last year. Any comments, Jay?
Yeah, and this, oddly enough, this sort of is going to go into my my inside perspective a little bit, but
nice.
One of the things that I think in general a lot of people don't understand about the Middle East is, in general, it's very tribal. Okay, so those borders, the border between Iraq and Syria, literally mean nothing to the people that have been living there for thousands of years. So for them, this is all like one big, like, okay, you know, it's like, it's just one big mess to them, even, and it's a big mess to us as well, as we try to sort of, you know, impose order and kind of a modern system of government and everything like that on them. None of this is good, which is obvious. It's actually quite scary. You know what I think, and the way to sort of help fix it is for everybody to sort of drop their political veil. No pun intended, Heather. and not sit there and blame, you know, what George W. Bush did, not blame what Barack Obama did, and not for it's to really just look at the given circumstance and say, okay, how do we fix that? And you know, my recommendation, if the president of the United States is listening, I would say to actually get together some of George W. Bush's team on this, because they know all the players there and can be of some help.
And combine that with
his current team.
Right. Okay. How does this relate to a couple of weeks ago when Obama was saying that they didn't want to take any military action?
No matter what you may think of the president, he is not clairvoyant and doesn't know that this was going to happen. So in my mind, it's a sign of good leadership to be able to say, okay, you know what? I said something 2 weeks ago. The situation on the ground has changed. The given circumstances has changed. Now we've got to retool.
Right. Okay. Rick, what do you think?
Well, I'm not sure we should have ever gone in there, because democracies don't have the willpower to see this kind of mission through. You know, we won the war in the war sense in a matter of what, weeks or so. It was pretty quick. Wasn't clear at the beginning, but then it happened pretty quick. But then, we knew going in that winning the peace was going to be really, really tough. And in part, winning the war so quickly made the peace tougher because all the enemies were still alive, hiding now, able to create problems. And so we should have been able to predict that this would be a long, a very prolonged nation-building exercise. And so we should never gone in being a democracy because we didn't have the staying power. We should have known that. And I hope we know that next time. But once we were in there, we shouldn't have left. Obama, I think, was very foolish in the way he so quickly took down all the infrastructure that we'd built there. All the troops on the ground, I think George Will called them the glue that was holding that nation together. And so this is absolutely predictable. That's what all the Republicans and at least the people who were in favor of staying there, this is what they predicted. It just took a little longer than they probably thought. And who knows what role Iran is really playing. So it's a big honking mess. And do we go back again? Not if we can't see it through. So I think it's just a mess. We have to let's see how it, cards fall and learn a longer-term lesson.
Okay, but don't you think when Obama brought the troops back, he was responding to what people actually wanted?
Well, that's the point about the democracy in a way is weak on these kinds of issues. It can't make tough decisions and, in this case, stay the course.
But nobody's going to be a leader for very long if they're doing everything that the people don't want.
Well, that's true. But sometimes, especially in the commander-in-chief role, you gotta be the big adult in the room there and do the right thing. And oftentimes people get rewarded politically for having seen it through. I think George Bush got rewarded politically for backing the surge in spite of a lot of angst back home and essentially winning the war when it seemed we were losing, you know, the second war, I guess that you want to call it. The real solution, by the way, is for us to heal ourselves, to figure out this freedom versus social justice policy so that other democracies can copy that too, and then we as a free world can be much more united, and these bad actors will be much more isolated, and then a lot of this will just fade away because the good guys will win. But that's a long-term solution.
Long-term meaning how many years?
Exactly 53.2.
Okay. 53.2. You heard it here, folks.
Yeah.
Mark your calendars.
I don't know how long it'll take. You know, it depends how long it takes for us to ramp up listenership on the politicalfixradio.com.
Exactly.
So,
yeah, okay.
Speaking of sort of clairvoyance, actually the, you know, one thing, and just here listening to Rick, I was reminded of something that when we first went into Iraq, Colin Powell said, and he was Secretary of State at the time, and he said, you know, you really have to think this through because you break it, you bought it. And clearly we broke it and then ultimately didn't buy it. And now we're like going back to buy it again.
Right. Okay.
Yep. So he was absolutely right. And I don't think anybody disagreed with him. I just think, again, going back to Rick's point, I think that they thought that, okay, yeah, we get it. We're willing to, we have the resolve, we have the steel to see this through all the way.
You know, if McCain or Mitt Romney had won those elections, then my guess, and it's just a guess, is that America would have stayed in Iraq instead of drawing down so quickly under Obama, and then we wouldn't have this problem right now. We still have soldiers dying in Iraq, but the transition to a more secure, stable system over there would have at least a chance. There's no guarantees, of course, but that's a chance.
Yeah.
Right. And actually one of the things, I would criticize the president for, is that he telegraphed exactly what we were going to do. Which, yeah. If you've read The Art of War, that's like, you know, the number one no-no.
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Well, let's continue this conversation when we come back after the break, and we'll also have the inside perspective with Jay Amernick when we come back on The Political Fix in a few minutes.
Welcome back to The Political Fix. This is Jay Amernick. I'm here with Rick Raddatz. Heather Vail is on a very brief assignment. She'll be back in 10 minutes. And we're going to pick up with the inside perspective with me. And this week, what I wanted to talk about is that, and again, it ties in perfectly to the top story, is that the more noise a lot of the politicians make. Now, there are exceptions to this. The more noise that a politician makes, usually the less important it is. So when they're not saying anything, that's when you should have the bejesus scared out of you, because it means something heavy is going on. And again, the way it ties in is as Rick suggested, that, you know, public opinion, and Heather suggested it as well, is that public opinion drives the policy. And that was sort of, you know, one of the reasons why President Obama got everybody out of Iraq. The bottom line is that sometimes when it comes to things, especially foreign policy, which is very complicated, very nuanced, and very sophisticated, the average American doesn't quite get it. I hate to be sort of condescending in that way, and I don't mean to be, but it's incredibly complicated in these. And there are people who deal in this who have spent years and years studying it and have doctorates in it and have practical knowledge of having actually done it for a very long time. So getting the headlines on the news, it's easy to say, you know, yes, you know, bring our boys home. Okay, well, there are consequences to that, but a lot of times people don't fully understand the ramifications of that. But then the pressure that the president's under, he succumbs to it, and then lo and behold, we have a bit of a problem, which is why quite often when there's something heavy going on, you don't hear them talk about it.
Well, when you say heavy, Jay, what's an example? Of a less noise, scary scenario?
Okay, I'll give you a great example, not from our own country, but a couple of years ago, probably about 5-6 years ago in Israel, when the Israelis had to invade Syria because there was all kinds of trouble on the border, and there's that famous picture of then Defense Minister Ehud Barak doing this. You know, they weren't saying anything, and for them to not say anything, was everybody was like, oh, something heavy's going on here, and it turned out to be okay. Correct. They were actually. It turned out that I believe they were dismantling some of Syria's nuclear capability, or their okay, their so nascent. They were trying to get it.
Okay, so in a democracy, when it's business as usual. It may not be good government, but at least it's like the devil you know. It's the typical government, and when they start acting differently than normal, something's up.
Yeah, actually, I can give you a great example from our own country. Actually, recently, I can't believe I forgot about this. When the operation to capture or kill Osama bin Laden. The night before was the famed press dinner, you know, where the president gets up and tells some jokes and is funny and everything like that. And they went along with it because if they had canceled it, everybody would have known something was up. So they went along with it. But then there's this somewhat sort of famous kind of inside story where they had canceled tours at the White House the next day. And George Stephanopoulos, who went from the political side in the Clinton administration to now the journal, the media side, said to I can't remember who he said it to. It may have been the chief of staff, and said, "So you guys are shutting down the tours tomorrow? You got something big going on?" And the guy like freaked out because he's like, "Oh great, now he knows." And then he just played it off. I can't remember what he said. Something like, "Oh no, there's some problem with some plumbing, and they're fixing it." But you can see that it's and I would not classify that as a cover up. That's a matter of national security, so sometimes these things have to be done. I mean, I think we have this attitude like, oh, we must know everything, we deserve to know everything. And I was like, you know, to be honest, you know, you don't. And now, you know, where we draw the line is obviously that's a much more complicated matter. But I, you know, I think we can all agree when you're talking about capturing or killing Osama bin Laden, who has been eluding us for a very long time. That operation, as a matter of fact, was a Bush era plan to capture him. Mm-hmm. So you can see how long it took. Don't spill the beans.
Yeah. No, I think you make a good point there. I'm wondering, like, when politicians on both sides are doing things like campaign finance reform,
Yeah.
And usually limits on campaign donations and so on almost always, just by their nature, help protect incumbents versus the upstart outsider who wants to get in. I wonder if on those issues that things just kind of happen a little bit more than if a position is the typical left versus right, we can't come together on this kind of issue. I think that kind of gives both politicians on both sides permission to bluster, because they know that no serious vote is going to come to the floor. I mean, we can vote 50 times to repeal Obamacare, because we know we're not going to be able to repeal Obamacare.
And okay,
if
right,
it actually becomes possible, they wouldn't be able to bluster like that.
Right, and actually the problem with it is, and this is when you weren't on last week, but I talked about big P politic versus little P politic, and when the two of them mix like this, it's not good, because you have guys who are putting forth something, in order to gin up support in their district, and it's what we would call in the Jewish community, it's geschreien gewalt. It means screaming really loudly, and it feels good, but it doesn't really get anything done, and it'll get everybody very excited on their side, but at the end of the day, you're right. No serious legislation is going to come to the floor, mainly because serious legislation is as boring as all get out, because it's actually effective, and it's usually when the two sides have compromised. So so you take the Affordable Care Act. You would say, okay, to the right, what are your objections to it? And most of them would probably say, well, the individual mandate probably some other things, but the individual mandate is probably the biggest, because it's the first time that in history that the government has said you must buy something.
So
then on the left, you have to say, look, we're not trying to destroy Medicare and Medicaid, and we're not trying to the idea of getting everybody health care is a noble idea, so let's figure out how to do it without an individual mandate or whatever sort of tramples on the Constitution.
Okay. Now, there's one little nit in your inside perspective that I want to take issue with.
Yeah.
You're talking about PhDs, doctors who've studied this a long time, done it a long time, and so they're the experts, and we should trust them or at least leverage them.
As far as diplomacy and things like that.
Yeah. But I'm going to say that they have a limitation that they don't admit to, that they probably haven't thought of. And that is, right now, people in the modern world, they look at modern society as capitalism plus democracy plus national defense / diplomacy. Okay? It's those three things. And capitalism helps make sure that individuals are behaving right with property rights in the free market so that they're making good decisions. It tries to at least, democracy tries to make sure that politicians are making good decisions. At least they're pandering to us instead of us pandering to them. And diplomacy backed by a strong defensive military is about encouraging foreign nations to make good decisions, at least relative to our concerns. And so these experts, they look at these three things as the knobs that they can turn. And so does the politic, the body politic, the people. We try to get power and democracy so we can control the defense and diplomacy and capitalism. But what I'm going to say, based on my philosophy work here, is that we need to incentivize the collective as a whole as well, so that we use our collective resources wisely. And we need to incentivize the species as a whole eventually, so that we as a species can be sustainable over the long term. And these two other dials aren't recognized, and in particular, the proper incentivizing of our collective, the cap and prioritize proposal that we have here. If we had that in place, then the political left could relax on capitalism a little bit, because now they have this collective resource economy that forces government to help people who need help most. And this, if you use the dynamic analysis where you say, let's imagine a world where this happens. And the left is more relaxed about capitalism, and the right can be more relaxed about government, and we can kind of get together and imagine other nations copying this model and being more mature themselves. That's when we can start to see these issues, nation versus nation kind of issues, the tribal issues. That, I mean, because you know, these, you know, the question of capitalism and democracy and defense and now this prioritizing of government resources, these are issues that, you know, cross against all cultures, all countries, all tribes, all religions. It doesn't matter. We all have to face these fundamental questions. So I'm not saying we shouldn't listen to the experts or leverage them, because in the moment, you got to do what you can do. But in parallel, we got to be thinking long term and healing ourselves as a nation so that we can eventually heal the world.
Right. No, what I'm saying is that those the people that are in place now, as far as the diplomats, that's yeah. that's the best we got right now. So,
Well, I'm going to say this, it's two tracks. One is yeah. leverage them to do the best they can. And that's the short-term, medium-term solution. Long-term solution is let's heal ourselves. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, if you ask any expert, they're not going to know about this. So you're going to get the wrong answer. Okay, so the experts aren't aware of the long-term path. So we have to do a better job on the show even explaining what this path is. I have a TED Talk up at thesolution.org if anyone listening wants to go see a TED Talk on this.
Yeah. But, okay, yeah, we should make sure we get a better job explaining. The link to that.
That's right. The TED Talk is on the politicalfix.com.
Okay.
Politicalfixradio.com is the website. So check out the TED Talk, and that's going to show you what the experts don't know. That there is a solution, that there is a path forward, that long term will dominate. It just might take a little while to get around.
Right. Well, you know, it's interesting because this is actually right in line with history. Is that the experts that we have in place now, you know, and you could go back. There was one point, you know, in the world of medicine, they thought, you know, bleeding people with leeches was a good idea, right? And everybody yeah. bought into it, right? Until something else was discovered, and they said, okay, wait a minute. Let's stop with the leeches. Not such a hot idea. So it's always that. There's always sort of that. You know, I don't want to say status quo because I want to give our diplomats. But it's the same idea.
I think status quo is the right word because in every body of science, okay, or serious thought, there is some kind of status quo, some kind of mainstream accepted conclusions about how the world works in that area of science. And then there's always people trying to come up with the next new paradigm. And the vast majority of these people are wrong. So the experts, to play it safe, have a lot of distrust for any new paradigm that claims to be the next paradigm. And that's appropriate. But that also means that when the next new paradigm really does come along, the experts for time are almost all wrong, and significantly wrong. I was watching some show on Netflix about how the universe works. My young kids love it. And this one scientist was saying that when he was in graduate school, anyone who talked about black holes, it was like, you're nuts. And it was like a joke. Right. In the science community then. And now, of course, black holes, I mean, everyone knows about black holes, and we really believe they exist, but it has to go through that phase. And so I forget who said this, but new ideas, they have to be ridiculed first and then rejected, and then and then finally the other side claims it was their idea all along.
That's exactly right. And also, you know, there's, and especially in the world of science, there are people who, you know, again, spend a great deal of time in school learning something, and then all of a sudden you're telling them that, water's not wet and rocks aren't hard. So then their entire education and their entire doctorate degree goes out the window, right? That's so they're going to defend their false notion, you know, forever.
Mm-hmm.
That's another challenge. Like I would suggest from last week when I, compared small political P to capital political P. When you stop searching for fact, and especially fact that will help enhance the greater good, you're being incredibly selfish and foolish. And history is littered with that, by the way, of people who've.
Oh yeah. Here's the good news, is that even with all the complexity and all the mistakes and all the tough decisions, and decisions made wrong. History still has a direction towards a positive end, meaning the way I describe it is that things that work tend to stick, things that fail tend to fade away, and so on average, and the key word there is average, on average, things get better. And I saw a graph on somebody's blog the other day that looked at the kind of the living standard of people through history, you know, starting like a couple thousand years ago up through the modern day. And it's flat, 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 flat. It's going up a little bit, little bit, little bit, and then go boom, you know, the modern era.
Yeah.
It's just this like almost vertical line at the very end of it, because, you know, we are so much better off now than 100 years ago, and so much better off then than 200 years ago. And 200-300 years ago, it was a lot like it was 500 years ago. And 500 years ago was a lot like it was 3,000 years ago. I mean, obviously there were some changes, but in terms of general living standard, you were farming and you were hunting. And even at our nation's founding, it took 99 people to make food for 100. So that was 200 years ago. So the progress we've made here is amazing. And a lot of our complaints are really just because we were born in this era and everyone wants it to be better, so we complain because it's not better. But if only we could have seen a longer term of history, we would just be so happy with where we were right now. But that's how progress happens, is that we're never satisfied.
Well, which is a good thing. We're always looking for what's next. And speaking of what's next, we're going to take a quick break.
Okay.
And when we come back, we will be back with Rick's Rant. You're listening to The Political Fix. I'm Jay Amernick. I'm here with Rick Raddatz. And when we come back, Heather Vail-Goss will be back from her assignment. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Jay Amernick. I'm here with Rick Raddatz, and Heather Goss is still on assignment. She'll be back in a few minutes. And now it is time for Rick's Rant.
Rick's Rant. Today I'm going to rant on onions based on the discussion we had with Heather earlier today. You know, she was talking about how she unwraps onions or something like that and gets to the core layer, but onions. I don't think I'm just half cores. I think her analogy is completely wrong, but we'll discuss that off the air. What I'm talking about here is the fact that everyone thinks the world is so complex. Okay, you know, this is tied to that, and that's tied to that. There's so many layers, everyone says, right? BS. The world's a simple place. We make it complex. Okay. And when I say it's simple, I mean we have individuals making decisions, we have collectives making decisions, we have politicians making decisions, we have foreign nations making decisions, and we have future generations that can't make decisions, so they rely on we as a species to make decisions for them. That's it. Those are the five types of decision makers we have in the world, and we can either choose to properly incentivize them or not. And so far, we've incentivized three out of the five: individuals, politicians, and foreign nations, with capitalism, democracy, and national defense. All we got to do is take that same structure and apply it to collectives and we as a species, and we've solved everything, at least at the high level. We'll still argue about all the details, but that's okay. Let's at least get the big, you know, the big rocks in place. And so I want to rant against this idea that the world is too complex for us to make a difference, for us to solve things and actually have the solution. We've got the solution. We've got the solution. And watch the TED Talk on politicalfixradio.com, and you will learn the solution. So that's my rant. Onions.
Okay, very good. So here's where I'm going to disagree with you all in the same sentence, because you actually sort of changed just a little bit, and there's just a slight nuance, which actually is sort of ironic because it makes it a little more complicated or complex. I think the world is complex, but I'm going to agree with you where I don't think it's too complex.
Okay.
I
kind of admit that because I'm saying, look, we make it complex. So clearly there is complexity there. But what, you know, the people who study complex systems, and I say this in my TED Talk, they all agree that at any one point in time, you know, if you think of a complex system as a network of rivers all flowing into each other, okay, things are moving all around, right? There's a lot of motion in a complex system. Well, any complex system is going to have some bottleneck. You can think of it as a log jam. You can think of it as a root problem. Or I think bottleneck is actually the best term. But the point is, if you focus your attention on that bottleneck, you have and you fix it, you have the potential to increase the output of the whole system. Okay? But if you work on any other area, you're not going to do any good because the bottleneck is still there over someplace else. In fact, the only thing you could do by accident is make it worse, create a new bottleneck. Okay? So if you aren't working on the bottleneck or the root problem or, you know, the logjam, whatever you want to call it, you're focusing all your attention on the wrong thing. So in that way, even in a complex system, if you do the work to figure out where that bottleneck really is, then you can really efficiently, you know, make incredible changes. But you got to look for the simplicity within the complexity.
Right, and a lot of this actually goes back to what we were talking about a little in the last break. There are people who have great stake in keeping things the way they are, and mm-hmm. and not doing as you suggest. And that has to be challenged, and those people have to be exposed. I'm not talking about forming a lynch mob here, but I'm saying, you know, we need to have like a real honest discussion. I think people have to be more focused on looking for fact as opposed to, twisting an ideology to fit their aim.
Yeah, the idea that some people have too much access to government, meaning like a big corporation or a big special interest group, they have more power than the average Joe, is an interesting topic, and I can almost do a rant on that. Because on one hand, the big corporations and the special interest groups, especially special interest groups, they are us. We own those corporations. We are a member of those special interest groups. Not all of them, but you know, we have our few that we're a part of, and you know, your mother-in-law has her few, and so on.
That's right.
And so these big special interests competing, that they're actually competing as our champions, representing us in a way. That said, I do admit that there is a problem, and this is what I believe is the root problem, in that government is too powerful and flexible in terms of how it responds to all these pressures. It can do the special deal that it shouldn't do. Okay,
right.
And because it can, it does, and that's when government is kind of quiet. You sneak in all those things on through the back end in the private meetings, and you're not publicly debating that kind of stuff. So what's the solution? The solution is, again, what we call cap and prioritize, where we're going to cap the heck out of government so that we're at least fiscally sustainable. That's kind of a minimum. And we can decide how much more to cap it than that, if at all. But at least let's be fiscally sustainable, which right now is not politically viable. But if we can get at least to that agreement, then the step two is to take what's left. You know, Jay, you know this, but I'm not talking to the listeners. Take what's left of government spending and prioritize it. So the transparency of a prioritized budget forces the government to do what actually works, what actually helps people. And under the pressure and transparency of a capped and prioritized budget, that's where these special interest groups and big corporations could not have the means to get the politicians to do special favors for them, because in a prioritized budget, you can't put the bridge to nowhere to help the contractor ahead of the homeless. It's just not going to fly politically.
Well, so not only that, I would ask you,
prioritize is the answer.
Are you a little bit to your point and say that if what is implemented, as you suggest, that these corporations wouldn't need to do this because they wouldn't, the free market would take care of a lot of these things, and they wouldn't have to rely on, as you suggest, again, the bridge to nowhere, the big dig, whatever these huge sort of useless projects are. And also, again, as you suggest, these things really sort of ruin good legislation. And it's all about, again, mixing the big P with the little P politic. And you know, for Congressman A to get Congressman B to vote for his bill, Congressman B has to put some schmutz in there to get him to vote for it, which is again, that's part of the problem. But the more transparent it is, the better off we are. The problem is that the people that would make it transparent all have skeletons in their closet when it comes to, you know, pork barrel spending, or, you know, putting some kind of, you know, favor in for somebody. There are exceptions to that, but, you know,
yeah, the fact that these special interest groups, and Heather's back now, by the way, so we, Heather, can you hear us?
I can hear you, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, so one last point on this, and we'll go back to Heather. But the fact that the special interest groups and the corporate bigwigs and so on have all this power makes a lot of people think incorrectly that they don't have the power to change it. But we, the people, do have the ultimate power, but only if we unite and become the strongest special interest group. we have to win the power game to end the power game. And so until now, we haven't known what the structure is that we'd want. You know, we have our different political views, and so we fight for those right now. But what the solution says is that the limits the political right wants is the first step in creating a competition of ideas, a really fierce competition of ideas. And it's that competition done right through prioritizing that is going to force government to come up with the best ideas. Okay, and so you need both. You need the limits to force competition, and then the prioritizing to make the good ideas win. And that's when you that's when the government will be forced to pursue social justice within libertarian conservative style limits. And so we, the people, have the power to make this happen, but it's not easy, and it shouldn't be easy. We have to figure out the idea, sell the idea, build a movement, and have the discussions. That's what this radio show is about. And only then will we have the power to end the power game. Heather.
Was that your rant, by the way? Because that sounded pretty rantish.
I had like two rants. I ranted about onions earlier in the hour.
Oh.
You missed that. You have to come back and listen to my onion rant.
Oh, you ranted about onions. Okay. No, I was here for that.
No. That was the baby rant that inspired the bigger rant.
We revisited it.
Great. I got to the core of the onion.
Okay, great.
Does the onion have a core?
No, really.
They don't have a core. I'm just teasing Heather again.
So was that your official rant, or do we still have your rant after the break?
No, that was the rant.
I can do rant, another rant if you want.
That was Rick's rant?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So
you got nothing?
I heard part of it. I heard him ranting. I mean, I want to hear the part about the onion.
Well, the quick rant on the onion is that everyone thinks that the world is so complex, all these layers, like an onion, and really it's real simple. Just these five things we're fighting over, and we got three out of the five done right. So it's actually really simple. It's not an onion, is what I was saying.
It's not an onion. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, onions in reality are pretty simple, too. They're just layers and layers of onionness.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, onions work much better as a metaphor than they do in reality. Just saying.
Well, I don't know. Onions on a pizza are great. So,
I do not like onions. I do not eat onions whatsoever. I am an anti-onion eater.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. No matter what I order in a restaurant, I say no onions. I do not want those on my food. And I noticed that in the U.S., they like to put onions on almost everything. So, yeah, that's my standard.
And not onions. In Canada?
No, not as much as here.
Okay, name something in America they put onions on that they don't put onions on in Canada. I challenge you.
Every egg dish has onions in it here. Every hamburger has onions on it.
Yeah.
Every meat dish. They don't have onions on hamburgers in Canada? You can get that, but it's not standard. It's not in every option on the menu. It's like there might be one omelet out of five that has onions in it or something.
All right.
Yeah. And it's not standard to have it on your burger. I mean, I think it is at McDonald's, but other places you ask for it or you don't ask for it. Anyway.
All right. Now that we've concluded our onion talk, I think it is time for a break.
No, wait, here's another one. Chef salads here typically come with red onions in them. In Canada, they don't put onions in the chef salad. Like, if it's just your basic, here's your salad on the side type of thing, it's like lettuce, tomatoes. It's not usually onions.
That's why you found more success in America, because the onion analogy didn't work in Canada. It just wasn't known.
No, they know what onions are. They know what onions are. Yeah. It's just, yeah. All right, okay. So you did the inside perspective, you did the outside perspective, and yeah. Let's open it up. We'll take a break, and when we come back, if you want to call in and you want to say to Rick and Jay what you think, it's 888-627-6008, opening up the floor for you, 888-627-6008, and we'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. And before the break, you heard Rick rant several times. You heard Jay give his inside perspective, and you heard the top story. Now we're going to wrap those things up and bring them together. We're not going to unwrap. We're going to wrap. But if you want to call in and you want to have your say, 1-888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008, and we'll let you talk to us as well. That's such a privilege. So, so we've been talking today about a bunch of stuff. Jay, how do you tie it all together and give a theme to today's show?
It's funny, and again, I guess this goes back to, this really does tie in because it's going to even go back to the onion thing. The more we progress every week, we're sort of building, and then I think about my inside perspective, and a lot of the things that we talked about today harken back to a past inside perspective, a past Rick's rant. So it all sort of, it just constantly builds and builds and builds, which I think is exactly what we're trying to do on this show is build something. A lot of, like we talked about last week, we talked about small P politic versus big P politic and how that really ties into everything. So we are actually wrapping. You are correct. We're like sort of putting layers back on the onion as we progress through this. Journey we're all on.
Do we want to look at it like a present? You know, when you're a kid and you would get a present and it would be like this little teeny box inside, and then a bigger box, a bigger box, a bigger box. So you'd think that you had this huge present, and then you'd unwrap the first present and inside the smaller box. Maybe that's the analogy that won't set Rick off and send him off on all these different onion rants.
Those Russian nesting dolls,
sort of like that, yeah. But you can make one for a kid, or even like it doesn't have to be. I mean, you could do it for your girlfriend, and you put a ring in the one box, and then you end up giving her this gigantic box. She thinks she's getting a vacuum cleaner or something, and then it ends up being a ring. Or it doesn't have to be a ring; it could be a necklace. Just saying.
I do like that analogy better. I think the onion analogy is more concise, perhaps, and sexier somehow. But the layers of present boxes, where you're as you begin through the layers, you're getting closer and closer to the truth, to that precious pearl, or diamond, whatever. And then eventually, you do get the reward at the end. So I like that part of it. I think politics is hard. It's emotional. People have their views, and they have their views for good reasons. And everyone is mostly right. I mean, the progressives are right that government has a role to play in the pursuit of social justice. The libertarians are right that out of control government hurts freedom, doesn't help freedom. And what hasn't become public knowledge yet is how we can get all of these different, mostly right ideas onto the same page, and into the same philosophy, the same proposal, so that we are uniting, truly, in a philosophical sense, we are uniting the values of all these sides instead of just playing the game.
Rick? That is actually really refreshing. I think that is the start of it, because usually you sit here saying everybody's wrong. Today you're saying everybody's right, because of course, I mean, there's always pros and cons to everything. People are right about some things, wrong about other things. Today you're focusing on the positive side of the coin, and I think that is what will actually bring this forward.
You have a good point there. The concept of a rant is kind of structurally against something.
Yeah.
I truly do believe that we are all mostly right. And just putting that puzzle together is hard, and it can seem very complex. It's kind of like a a puzzle,
okay.
Like the Rubik's Cube.
Rubik's Cube, yeah.
Like if you don't know, if you haven't been trained on the patterns to use, it seems impossible to figure out. And I really admire the people that somehow have the brain power to actually figure it out. I wasn't able to. I read the book. Just a couple weeks ago, I memorized the patterns in the book, and so now I can solve the Rubik's Cube. At least I could have a few weeks ago.
Wow! I'm actually impressed because I never memorized it.
the point is that something can seem, before you learn the solution, incredibly complex, and then once you learn the solution, you know, it might still be challenging, but it's something you can master. It's something that you can actually accomplish. And that's what I think is possible with our political divide, is that it is, you know, now that we know the solution, and again, watch the TED Talk on politicalfixradio.com, but now that we know the solution, it's just a matter of time. People will get it. They'll build on the movement. They won't leave because it's right, and we'll get there.
Yeah. Okay. So Jay, you were mentioning that everything's been building and building and building, and you know, eventually, when something builds and builds, there's got to be a climax. So, where do you see that happening?
You Vegas people.
It's always just a little dirty. Okay, so
it's too early for Jay to work blue. I forgot.
Yeah, that's right. never before 8.
8 okay, p.m.?
So, yeah, that's when you work.
Oh, okay. I thought noon. Okay.
It's 8 o'clock. You know what? It's 8 o'clock somewhere. Okay, so... so I think that the climax, as you put it, I would say.
Why is Jay stammering? What did you do to him?
Because she made it's a dirty reference. So I'm saying pinnacle. So the pinnacle is, I think, is as Rick suggests, when this system is implemented.
Okay. And how many years will that be?
Well, according to Rick. 53
and a half. We talked about this.
53.2. We're still on that? Okay.
Or 0.2. Yeah, that's right.
53.2, something like
that. Actually, you know what? I think I'm gonna be more of an optimist and say it's gonna happen a little bit sooner, for a couple of reasons.
Yeah.
One, that it has to, because things are coming unglued, and two, because the way the world works now, everything is in hyperdrive. It's not the way we communicate is a lot more instantaneous. The way information gets passed along is you know, is again also instantaneous. So I think these things have a chance of catching on. Now, that being said, the other challenge with that is there are, you know, 10 million other, you know, ways for people to self-actualize, and you've got to like sort of, you know, drill through the nonsense, the muck, to get to something that's actually going to work. Again, going back to the center, the you know, peeling back the Russian nesting dolls and finally getting to that pearl in the middle. See how it all ties in?
Yeah. I've never seen Russian nesting dolls with a pearl in the middle, but we could do that.
They have in the middle, don't they?
The smallest one. The smallest doll is in the middle. One that doesn't open. But we can take out the doll that doesn't open in the middle, and we could put a pearl in there.
Or make the one in the middle made out of gold.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah. Like the golden Buddha that for years they thought it was just painted. They just thought it was a stone or whatever. They didn't know it was gold.
Solid gold.
Solid gold underneath, yeah.
How big was it?
Huge! Like, giant, yeah. Like the size of a house.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
No. Where's it at?
Yes.
There's no golden Buddha the size of a house that's solid gold.
Well, it could be a small house.
Right, I'm calling BS actually, on that one.
Yeah, there's actually not that much gold has been... mined actually in the history of man.
Yeah.
Okay, I will look it up. I will look it up for next week, and I will give you the stats.
Wonderful.
On the Golden Buddha.
Where is it now?
Somewhere in Tibet or somewhere, I guess.
And I assume quite protected.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. They must have put it in a museum or something. Like, they wouldn't just leave it sitting out there.
So it's got to be a museum at least twice the size of a house in order to house the house-sized Buddha.
Yeah, something like that.
There we go.
When I was in second grade, I misread a book on hummingbirds, and instead of them being 2 ounces, I thought for sure they were 2 pounds. And my aunt, when I tried to tell her that hummingbirds were 2 pounds, the biggest ones, she was like, "Yeah, right, hum, you know." And so in our family to this day, when someone says something that clearly is not true, hum.
That's freaking awesome.
I'm humming your Golden Buddha.
All right, I'll get you the stats on the facts next week.
Okay.
Right, cause, yeah, but imagine, like, how would you actually do it? How would you, because gold is very, it ain't so easy to work with.
Well, Well, you see, Buddha originally had a flat stomach, and then it kind of, it was so malleable, it kind of became a Buddha belly.
that's actually something else to consider.
Buddha actually did not have a fat belly.
Yeah, I'm going through the same process myself.
It's metaphoric of wealth and stuff, so.
Yeah.
Anyway, on that note, we will have all the facts for you next week. Go to politicalfixradio.com, check out the archives. You can see the goofy behind-the-scenes videos, and you can also listen to the actual broadcasts of the radio shows, and you can see Rick talking at his TED Talk about the solution. That's all at politicalfixradio.com, and we'll be back with you next week for another episode of Political Fix Radio. On behalf of myself, Jay Amernick, and Rick Raddatz, have a fantastic week, and we'll talk to you then. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vale Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.